Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to yet another Magic Week in Review. This is Michael with you. Justin Robert Young is again AWOL. We are going to find that guy one day, I promise everyone. But instead this week we are joined by New York magician Ben Nemser. Ben, are you there?
Yes, I am. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's very, very snowy here in New York City.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting inside in the warmth.
It's what a good place to be. It is winter after all. Everybody keeps acting like it's a surprise that it's snowing place. It is winter.
Although, you know, I think it was last year in New York, our biggest snow was in October, and then the rest of the winter was dry. So we don't know what we're doing over here in New York.
Ours last year was spring break, so I am looking forward to that possibility still in St. Louis. Now, all our listeners out there, if Ben's name is kind of getting in the back of your head, and you're like, why do I know this guy? You've been on our site. I dubbed you the magical Cupid because do wedding proposals.
Yeah, I do.
And why don't we jump into that? Because it is the Valentine's Day season. Did you find that in Tarbell? How did that turn out?
Yeah, Charbel is a six, I think. Wedding proposals is next to a next. Never mind. you know, it's really funny. It was something that really kind of found me. You know, I still have a restaurant gig in Tribeca, New York, and it's an upscale restaurant. And a couple times, people have come in and they go, "Oh, you know, there's a magician here. I want to do something for my proposal." And these complete strangers would hand me their rings and want me to do something with it. And so I came up with all kinds of clever things. Some I came up with, you know, on the spot where I'd, make them appear out of flash paper or incorporate them in a magic trick. And, obviously in a sophisticated way, because these are some of the most important moments of people's lives. And I always thought, wow, you know, if I were getting engaged, I don't think I would trust a random magician at a restaurant in these situations, but they did, and they went very well, enough so to the point where some people would call the restaurant saying that they wanted to have an engagement, and the restaurant would specifically call me to ensure that I would be there that night. So before I did any of the projects that have kind of gained a little notice online and whatnot, I had already kind of helped facilitate magic proposals, you know, at least 10 or 12. And then a good friend of mine, Vinny DePonto, calls me, or he used to go by Vanishing Vinny. He gave me a call and said, "Hey, listen, you know, I'm not available for this job. Somebody called me. They're coming here from Mexico. They want to propose to their girlfriend in Times Square. They wanted me to pretend to be a street magician performing and gathering a crowd, and they're going to walk up with their girlfriend, and they want you to incorporate them." So an idea that was completely dreamt up by somebody else looking for a magician in New York to kind of make this happen. And my buddy Vinny said, "Hey, Ben, you know, I have a gig for you. It's kind of outside the box. Would you want to do it?" And my gut reaction was, well, you know, this is definitely outside my comfort zone. I've done limited performing on the street. I did something with a group that raised money performing magic to fight cancer in Times Square. And I've done some other stuff on the, you know, but I wasn't a huge busker. I wasn't used to really kind of drawing crowds in a situation where I wasn't specifically supposed to be there. And so my answer was, you know, this is a little outside my comfort zone. So yes, that's exactly why I'll do it. Because I thought it'd be really good for me. to kind of, you know, stretch out those boundaries. So I tried it, and it was great. It was really cool. We had probably about 100 people gathered around me in Times Square for that magic proposal. And it got, I haven't checked the video in months, but I think it got a decent amount of hits on YouTube. You guys put it up on your site.
We did.
Sorry, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, we did put that in because the gentleman who was behind all this, he paid to have some pretty decent video taken of it. It's not like the fumbling street magic, you know, camera you ever, you know, kind of thing, camera work you'd normally see. It's not shot on an iPod. It's a really good video.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the day before we had
Hold on. Let me just say, if people want to see it, if you're going, I don't remember if I've seen it. If you search on iTrix, search for Wedding Proposal, because at the time, because this wasn't put up as a promotion for Ben, we didn't know who it was. The guy. He put it up. So we ask, does anybody know who this magician is? And that's how we found you.
Right. Somebody thought I was, somebody said, oh, I think it's Eric Mead, which I was flattered. but I'm not. And I was like, all right, he's a great magician. I'll take the compliment. But so that was put up by the guy. And so people kind of saw that. And then you guys actually helped identify me. And then somebody else saw it and said, oh, this looks great. I'm coming to New York with my girlfriend of 6 years. And I want to do the same thing. And by then, you know, I already had a format. And I said, well, listen, you know, here are the things I've done. Here's what I can offer you. I have a lot of friends in the event business. So, you know, I asked a buddy of mine who does a lot of my videography to film the following one. And we were actually able to replicate a similar situation in front of the tree at Rockefeller Center the week of Christmas. And I think the coolest one I did was with a full-out production company, and we had about 50 extras involved, and we had the whole back area of a beer garden rented out for this event, with a camera crew of three, a DT, a director, two other actors, me as the magician and consultant, the groom who was in on it, and then the girl, again, who had no idea. It's kind of a little niche that kind of finding me, which is really neat.
It is cool, and it is always good to kind of have that specialty. Now, how are you kind of promoting yourself in any way? Because if you were looking to do magic at wedding receptions, you could go to bridal shows. You know, you can go to bridal shows, set up a little booth, you got your videos, and try to get booked as entertainment. But there really isn't an equivalent kind of a format to meet potential grooms. Like, dudes don't do bridal shows for some reason.
Right. Well, yeah, and especially at this point in the game, because these are people. A guy wouldn't go to a bridal show, and if he does go to a bridal show, I admit I have been to a bridal show. But
you were already engaged, weren't you?
Yeah, I'm engaged. Yeah, I'm engaged right now. But I certainly want to go as a non-engaged boyfriend. And in fact, I would probably go running the other direction. So it is something that's very difficult to target. But honestly, it's not something that I have been targeting. Like I said, it's something that's been finding me. And I'm not saying that I'm not embracing it, but I'm certainly not actively pursuing it at this point. But I might. I have some projects in the works and some things I'm working on that might kind of really accelerate this. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's got to be nerve-wracking, though. I mean, how many have you done so far, would you guess?
I've done probably close to 20 now.
Wow. I mean, but even after 20, like this is potentially the biggest moment in someone's life. Hopefully the biggest moment, you know, up to that point. There is a certain factor that, you know, she could say no. It would not be your fault. But, I mean, there's a lot of nerves in this.
How do you handle that? I've been very lucky. But it definitely keeps me on my toes. you know, you need, what am I trying to say? I practice, you know, and as a magician, it's important to practice and it's important to sit down and it's important to do things that you're comfortable with. But this is kind of a different vein of customized magic, you know, magic kind of outside the box. And I have to remember that, you know, it's not like I'm going into a walk-around setting where I have 15 tricks that I've done, you know, that are time-tested a billion times with this, you know, the same, you know, improv-based pattern. This is, you know, very specific, customized magic. In some senses, some of the times it's been in hidden camera situations. And, you know, the thing is, as a, you know, I have a lot of training as an actor, but as an actor or as even as a anyone working in a camera situation, you're used to, oh yeah, there's camera. If I flub it, we'll just fix it in post. Or if something goes wrong, we'll just do the take again. But when you have one person who's not in on the situation, you have one take to make it happen, and you can't mess it up. So it's definitely, you know, the stakes are high, and you got to practice and sit down and work things out and, you know, get your friends together and consult and, you know, really make sure that, you know, I also have a solid team of friends in New York that I work with and talk with and bounce ideas off of. But it's fun. I've had a lot of experience with, before this, with customized magic. I've learned, you know, I went to Tannen's Magic Camp, and they always taught us to, you know, think outside the box, come up with different things. You know, we were kind of forced in that vein to come up with custom magic. And I've also kind of invented some custom magic tricks for private events that I've done. So it's not something completely new to me, but it's definitely a new genre.
And then on top of it, I mean, I imagine that some of these engagement rings are pretty darn hefty as far as price tag.
Yes. And I know too, because it's kind of a rite of passage that men go through. When you're getting engaged, you have to learn all about diamonds and diamond rings and what they entail. It used to be like, oh, wow, that's very pretty. But now it's like, oh, wow, that looks like it's 2 carats princess cut, you know, definitely very clear. And, you know, you learn the 4 C's of the diamond, 5 C's rather. It's cut, cost, clarity, color, and I think quality. You know, the quality starts with a Q and cost is kind of the made up one. But, yeah, so I think the one in Rockefeller, my gut instinct was as soon as I saw the ring, I was like, oh, I could have charged this guy more. That's a nice ring.
It's never been, oh, crap, I probably should have some kind of insurance.
Well, I do have insurance, so that's not a worry. But I've always been very hesitant with rings. You know, there's a lot of effects out there with rings that I've never bothered with. You know, I had a ring flight as a kid, and then it fell by the wayside, and I realized that, you know, I wouldn't, you know, even if you have insurance policy, these things are irreplaceable. If you do a ring flight and it hits a table and the diamond falls out, you know, who cares if you have $1 million insurance policy? You ruin somebody's ring, you know, and now as somebody who's invested money into an engagement ring for my fiance, one of the first things I said to her is, you never take this off and lend it to a magician. And she's like, yeah, I know. I don't care who they are. If a magician asks you for your engagement ring, you say no. And she's like, yeah, no, I would never do that. So, but that being said, it's amazing in magic how many times you see a magician say, oh, yeah, let me borrow a ring. And people just take it off. And it's amazing how many times, you know, I've been in whatever situation, and some people have been, I'll give you the ring, and you hold on to it, and you'll come back, and you'll make it appear. And I'm like, oh, hold on, you're just going to give me this? Like, hold on. So I'm never presumptuous enough to assume that somebody's going to give me the ring. You know, sometimes I'm holding the ring in the box, and I make it appear. But, you know, other times, like the one I did most recently in Rockefeller, I said, you know, I'm happy to take the ring or you can hang on. And he wanted to hang on to it. And I said, that's fine. So we worked out, you can see the video. It's not posted yet. It's posted on YouTube. I don't know the URL offhand, but it's on my YouTube account, which is Ben Nemzer, BenNemzer. And you see the Rockefeller proposal. But we had like a nice little distraction while she was reading something. He just took out the ring and got down on one knee. But yeah, man, some of these rings are crazy.
Now I have a question for you because you mentioned you're engaged. You're going to be getting married soon. Have you picked out your ring?
My wedding ring?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And I'm going to start brushing up on some ring magic now that I actually have a, having a ring on me.
Well, not only is that opening up ring magic for you, but, have you practiced with a wedding ring on yet? Cause it could actually change your. I found that when I got married, it's like, hey, how come coins make noise in my left hand that never used to make noise in my left hand? Oh crap!
Oh, I have a wedding ring. You know, no, I haven't. That's going to be a fun challenge.
Let me make a suggestion. Get on eBay, Amazon, whatever. Buy yourself a like $7-$10 steel titanium carbide men's ring, about the same size as your wedding ring. Practice with it. If coins dig into it, coins tear it up, it's not going to matter to you. If you know, but it'll give you that chance to start learning because your hand feels different with that ring on. And that's my tip to all you young magicians out there. It's a life changer. Plus, it's totally a the handcuff to the ball and chain. But
there you go. As my friend David Oliver always says, and things like this, he's like, yeah. I gave her the ring. She gave me the finger.
Okay. And on that note, let's go ahead and take a break.
All right, sure.
And we will be back right after this, more with Ben Nemzer. We're going to talk about New York and some magic news and some other great stuff right after this. Hey, everybody. It's Michael. And a friend of iTrix, Ben Nemzer, has been greatly influenced throughout his life by his experiences at Tannen's Magic Camp, not just as a youth who attended, but to this day, as he continues to work there as a counselor. Tannen's Magic Camp is really a great opportunity for kids who are interested to learn so much about the world of magic, and there are so many deserving kids who would be great at Tannen's who can't always make it. So they do have scholarship opportunities and scholarship funds. So this week we're asking if you could help out with a scholarship. If you know somebody who could sponsor it or would like to chip in, please contact Tannen's Magic Camp's camp director, Terry Cook, at 718-631-8908. That's to help sponsor a kid for Tannen's Magic Camp, 718-631-8908. Thank you.
iTrix.com.
Okay, and we are back with Ben Nemzer here at the iTrix Magic Week in Review. And Ben, this is the Magic Week in Review, so there is something that I want to bring up that is not, unfortunately, the happiest story in Magic right now. But as we are recording, we have just found out that Aldo Calambini passed away last night.
Yeah, one of the greats, man.
He really was. Did you ever get a chance to see him perform live?
You know, I believe I saw him at a convention once. But, you know, one of my earliest memories of learning magic on a video was I was probably about 12, 13 years old, and I was the only kid member of my local chapter of Society of American Magicians. And I won something, and I got Aldo Calambini on VHS. And I remember going to my room and practicing the linking ropes. And that's one of my earliest memories of kind of sitting in front of the TV and learning magic tricks on video. So, you know, I didn't know the guy. I can't claim to know him. But, you know, I know he did a lot for magic, and I kind of have that as a memory of him.
Yeah, I can't claim to have known him either. I did see him perform at a convention before, and he was fun to watch, you know. There's a special
kind of magic for magicians. And for a lot of people, that kind of slips into the even more kind of analytical style of I'm going to fool you magic. But he had that kind of easygoing pitch man, kind of a swagger. I'm going to call it a swagger that just made him fun to watch. It didn't matter if you knew exactly what the trick was.
He's very interesting to watch, yeah. And you know what? He was fun to watch, and he had a cool accent.
Cool accents are the best.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing what you can get away with when you have an accent. But he was very enjoyable to watch. And, you know, I think a huge pillar in the magic community. I don't think I've heard anyone ever say anything bad about him, you know. My friend David Oliver went through some really terrible surgeries and life-threatening disease recently, and him and his wife, Aldo Colombini and his wife, have, you know, I've just heard, you know, testaments of how they've been there and reached out and kind of really been there every step of the way for their friends and for other magicians, and, you know, it's definitely a big loss, you know, somebody who's, you know, contributed to magic and to the, you know, the camaraderie that we have as magicians is, you know, even if you don't know the person, you feel the loss. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Definitely. I think that we can say the world, the magic world in particular, but the world is a poor place today.
And we lost Shirley Temple recently.
And Sid Caesar.
Sid Caesar, yeah, who also did some magic.
You know, I don't know that he actually did magic. I know he performed in Amazing Stories as a magician. And I know that I think there's one other movie where he's supposed to be an escape artist, but I'm not sure that magic was actually in his background except for being trained for a couple of roles here and there. He just seems like a magician.
I know he worked with Carl Reiner and his Professor Houdini von Hofmeyer thing, where he was like a master of illusion. And I don't think he. Maybe he wasn't a magician per se, but you know he definitely got magic into the public light as a comedian, which was really cool.
Yeah, and I mean magicians can learn from Sid Caesar. You know, I heartily suggest everybody go back and kind of check out some of his television work, especially.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, he's the kind of his facial expressions and. You know, everything like that, his comedic timing, absolutely. There's a lot to learn from him as a performer. And, I grew up watching Shirley Temple as a kid, you know, just kind of that. I think every person who starts performing as a kid can kind of relate to that, precocious type of attitude as a child of, oh, yeah, I'm going to show you a magic trick or I'm going to do a dance for you or, you know, whatever it is. She's always kind of been even as a little kid, a role model.
Yeah, it's you know so important for magicians to look outside of magic for inspiration and for guidance. You know, in that kind of mentorship you can get from seeing other performers, even if you don't ever meet them or speak to them. And
I'm glad you say that because. There's a lot of people in magic who look to other magicians and look to magic for inspiration for magic, and it almost seems redundant. You don't see a painter painting a painting and say, oh, my inspiration was this other painting, you know? But so many times in magic, it's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I got this idea because it reminded me of something I saw in this person's act, and a lot of magicians are doing this, so I thought I would be doing that. Rather than, you know, in life, I see this, and in music, this reminds me of that. But really, you know, I think more magicians should look outside of magic for inspiration. When people ask me who one of my favorite magicians is, you know, oddly enough, one of my responses sometimes is Jim Henson. And then and people go, well, he's not a magician. And I say, really? But you know, there's a lot of non-magicians out there that I think people kind of overlook.
It's you funny know, that you mentioned Jim Henson. I started a semi-regular thing, experiment on non-magical things to put up on iTrix. And the first one was the recent Jim Henson biography. Because because I think he's such a huge kindred spirit to magic. And not because he was a puppeteer, but because of what he did with puppetry and so much more. And it's funny that you mentioned him because he's on my list of people I would point to as well.
Well, you know, puppetry is interesting because puppetry takes everything about magic, if done well, that you need to make real magic, except the method. It basically says, screw you. Can I say screw you on this podcast?
Well, screw you. Did. Yeah.
I did. Beep. It's basically saying, screw you. Here's the method. You know my hands up here. You see the strings. You see the sticks. And you're going to walk away believing in magic anyway.
In ventriloquism, even kind of takes that away because it is kind of saying that here I'm going to do something that obviously isn't real, and I'm going to make you think it's real, you know, and you're going to watch me and try to catch me at it, you know. I've actually recently been looking a lot more at puppetry and ventriloquism just personally because I think there's a lot to learn from it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's you know, like I said, the method is out there and you see the method. And with magic, you know, sometimes you're forced to suspend your disbelief. With puppetry and stuff like that, it's a very willing thing. You buy into the world so much that you're willing to, it's like if you go to see Peter Pan on Broadway, you see the strings. You know, you see the people in strings flying across the, you know, the wires and the harnesses, and you get over it because you understand that it's theater, and then you buy into it. But I think in magic, it's our job to kind of, you know, make those invisible so people can buy into it even more. And, you know, there's a lot of people who do that in all different mediums. You know, you look at actors on TV and in film, and you see these people. And you really just buy into that world where whatever the conditions that are set up before you are possible. And I think that's what magic is about. And that's why I think more people need to look outside magic for inspiration.
That's very well said. And it reminds me that now you do a fair amount of actually teaching of magic.
Yeah, I do. Right now I teach at 4 private schools on the Upper East and Upper West Side. I head up their after-school magic programs. I'm a teacher and counselor at Tannen's Magic Camp, which is in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, every year. And, you know, and I've had some of the most amazing teachers over there. And, you know, I've taught at different camps, and I teach a handful of private lessons as well here in New York City. So, yeah, I have quite a bit of experience teaching.
And how has that made you a better magician or a better performer? Let's just take magician out of it because I hate talking about that. You're a performer. You're a performer. How's it made you a better performer?
Right. Well, I wouldn't discredit, you know, how it makes me a better magician as well because, you know, sometimes you're forced to relearn things when you want to teach them. You know, I had, you know, for example, I don't exactly do a card manipulation routine. I can do a back palm. I can do peel-offs. My split fans are all right. You know, basically, I have the McBride tapes, and I can do maybe 50% of what's on the 3 volumes. But I have a student now who says, I want to learn card manipulation. And that's great, because now I'm relearning my card manipulation, and I have to learn it enough to a level where I can teach it. You know, so it's really... When you set yourself up as an expert, you really have to make sure that you know the stuff that you're going to teach. So that's definitely helped me in certain senses, is that I get to brush up on things that I probably might not have brushed up on if I didn't. You know, I was working on a coin routine, and one of my students says, "Oh yeah, I want to do something with a jumbo coin." So, you know, I go through my books and I go through my DVDs and I brush up on everything I know with jumbo coins. So it definitely does make me a better magician, I think, because when you teach something in any field, you really have to know it.
Have you ever had an experience where teaching someone an effect or a technique or even a kind of a genre has changed your mind on it, where, you know, as soon as they say to you, I want to learn, whatever, the linking rings, the Chinese sticks, whatever, and you go, internally you go, oh gosh, oh no. But then by the end of it, you're like, you know what, this is actually something, I see the value in this now.
You know, I have a lot of students who are get swept up in the flourishing phase, and I'm not a big flourisher myself. You know, there's always kind of two schools of magic, the flourishing or kind of naturalism, and I've always kind of steered away from the flourishing. But sometimes you're like, oh, I want to learn flourishes, and you know, I understand, and I don't discount or discredit the idea of how cool and how effective flourishing can be with magic. It's still not my style, but you know, I've brushed up on some of the stuff so I could teach my students, and I'm learning some new fun things as well for myself. But other than that, not really, I wouldn't say.
So you're in New York, you're teaching, you're in a city that is very much a kind of a hub of the world for so many industries and arts. And in magic, it can get brushed aside a bit for Vegas, obviously, and the West Coast sometimes. But there's a lot of magic going on in New York. How is it great to be a magician in New York, or does it just make it harder to be a magician in New York because there's so much great magic?
You know what? I mean, let's take a step back. I mean, let's just talk about being an artist in New York in general, first of all. I think it's great. I think it's fantastic. I think it's art is something that's really respected here in New York. You know, even the city provides art installations and art, you know, live art exhibits. There's so many museums in the city, and there's a lot of patrons for the arts in New York City. You know, the difference between, you know, Vegas and New York is the magicians in New York have work, because there's a lot of, you know, I'm not saying there's not a select handful of people in New York who are working as magicians. But, you know, everybody kind of says, oh, I want to be a magician, I'm going to move to Vegas. Oh, you're going to be a magician, or are you going to one day move to Vegas? You know, it's a question in New York that you hear a lot. And the problem is, you know, and from what I've heard, Vegas is being oversaturated with magicians. I remember a conversation I was having with Johnny Thompson once, and he was telling me that in the 70s, he was making more money in Vegas than what, you know, the better paid magicians are making right now, because there's so many magicians there. But in New York, you know, you have, I think, 13%. The highest percentage of high net worth individuals in the country are right here in New York City. So the private party scene, the corporate work scene, just the opportunities for magic and for people who would like to see magic and who can afford to see magic. There's probably more opportunity here than maybe anywhere else in the country, including Los Angeles and Vegas.
Just go ahead and let's pimp your city now. Throw out some things.
All right, let's do it.
What's going on in New York right now, this weekend, Valentine's Day weekend?
Valentine's,
grab the paper. No,
weekend.
No, but people are going to be coming to New York who listen to this right here. What should they plan for? What should they go out of their way? What is available to them obviously, beyond the private shows and stuff, that they might not be hearing about, that they should be hearing about?
Sure. Well, first of all, there's some very well-kept secrets here in New York as far as magic goes. And, you know, there's a long-standing traditions of magic in New York. You know, even Harry Houdini was in New York City, started Parent Assembly number one of the Society of American Magicians. But things to see in New York. One of my good friends and kind of mentor over the years, Steve Cohen, has a show at the Waldorf. Are you familiar with his show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
Chamber Magic. I hate to think of Steve Cohen as a secret, but you're probably right.
But it, you know, we as magicians know, and, you know, when I work private parties, you know, for, you know, well-off families, there's always this one person who goes, oh, I know about the show that a lot of people don't know about. It's in the suite at the Waldorf. It's a classy magic show. And, you know, it kind of is a New York City, you know, well-kept secret because it only seats about 50 people per show. So it's not like The Lion King where there's thousands of people seeing it, you know, once or two times a day. Comparatively speaking, there's so much theater in New York. And people, you know, theater is so over, entertainment in general is kind of oversaturated here. You know, not to go off on too much of a tangent, we'll come back to New York. But, you know, performing at, let's say, a bar mitzvah in New York City, which I actually work lots of those, is probably my bread and butter. But, you know, performing a bar mitzvah in New York, you got to be on your A game because the average 13-year-old child have seen a lot of magic in New York City. Whereas there's other places, when I travel other places in the country, I used to go to the Caribbean annually for events, and you'd be doing magic for people, and it was literally their first time ever seeing magic live, ever. And no matter what you did, it was going to blow them away. There's a need to, you know, you really have to bring your A game to do well in New York with magic. And there's kind of there's kind of like a ring of magicians. There's really only maybe, I'd say, fewer than 20 magicians in New York City who are kind of actually working the circuit. And they all kind of know each other. And some are guys that you may have never have heard of. But, you know, those are the workers. And it's interesting kind of being in New York, you hear the kind of the same names over again because people really want, they don't want stuff that everybody's kind of seen before. You know, you can't get away with an invisible deck, you know, because, I want to imagine, you know, even an average 13-year-old in New York City probably knows about either Phantasma or Tannins or Penguin Magic or something like that. You know, they're watching YouTube videos too. So I feel like New York City, the game has been upped a little bit as far as magic goes. But going back to Pimping My City, Steve Cohen, great magic show. When I was in college, he kind of took me in under his wing and I'd go in, I'd help him set up his show and set up the seats. And, you know, I watched his show every Friday night for a few years. Then I'd help him set up for the next show because he'd do two shows in the evening. And then we'd hang out and he'd teach me magic. He'd let me pick his brain. But if you're in New York City, you got to check out Steve Cohen's Chamber Magic show. You got to get your tickets in advance. Monday Night Magic is the longest running magic show in New York City. I think it's on 15 years now. And that's a place where I've really kind of learned theater from the inside out. When I studied theater in college, but I interned there. I started filling cups of ice in the concession stands, ushering people to their seats. I worked sound there. I worked lights. I worked backstage. I worked in the production office. I do close-up magic there. I perform on stage there. I've worked the box office there. So that's kind of a place over the last many years where I've learned theater, but it's also a great place for people to come and see magic. There is a good friend of mine. Here's another well-kept secret, a free magic show in New York City at the Players Club, a very esteemed magic club. A very esteemed club for theater patrons and patrons of, theatrical artists and patrons of the arts. It's the Players Club New York. It was founded by Edwin Booth and who else? John Wilkes Booth's brother. So it's a weird kind of it was Mark Twain and Edwin Booth, I believe, founded the club. I don't know. It's a really cool historical venue that has a magic show called Magic Hour. And I think it's a monthly show by the resident magician and a friend of mine, Patrick Terry. And that's a show that's worth checking out. There's the Quantum Eye is another show that's happening in New York City. Tarek Delgadio and Elder Demirez just did Nothing to Hide, which came from L.A. to New York, which was fantastic. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yeah, we've covered that on iTrix quite a bit.
Okay, then I won't talk too much about that. But that was just great to see. That was one of those things where it really looked good for magic. I think it really kind of, you probably guys talked about this a lot, but it's, the more good magic that people see, the better it is for our profession as magicians. And I think they really did a good job with that.
That's right, because there's hundreds of thousands of drunken uncles working against us at almost every family event.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And then we have Tannen's Magic in New York City, the oldest magic shop. It's the oldest magic shop in New York. It's possibly, there's debate about, what the oldest magic shop is in the country. There's Magic Inc. In Chicago, but they may have closed once and reopened, and I don't know. But either way, Tannen's Magic is a very kind of historical place where, people have been going for years and years and years. And that's a trip. That's also another well-kept secret in New York. It's on the sixth floor of a commercial building that you have to know it's there to get there. It's a very small kind of little storefront. And, anyone who's anyone in magic who comes to New York, stops through there. And that's kind of a really fun hangout. And I got a lot of my experience working behind the counter there right after I graduated college. But yeah, I don't know. What about you? Have you been to New York and seen any New York stuff?
I have driven through New York on my way to shoot video for other things, but I have never.
Oh, boy.
Never stopped in.
Oh, you got to come in. There's like little nooks and crannies of like pockets of magic here in New York. The toy stores have a longstanding tradition of magic. I remember being a little kid visiting FAO Schwartz and, seeing a magician demonstrate the Svengali deck. And, that was one of my earliest encounters of magic. And that's some people, people come to New York and they're like, oh, yeah, I bought this at the toy store. I actually got to work for Phantasma Magic and Marvin's Magic at both FAO Schwartz and the large Toys R Us in Times Square, kind of growing up and working my way through college. And that was actually a really cool way to get tons of performance experience. I remember one of the things I would do is I would be pitching stripper decks and Svengali decks, but I would be doing my demonstrations with regular bicycle decks. And I would try to do all of the same effects that we were selling, only I would be using actual sleight. So, in the instructions for the stripper deck, there was a triumph. So I would be doing, my version of triumph with a zero. Or with a Svengali deck where you make all of them turn into the same card. I'd practice multiple forces and then do like a Hindu shuffle into a frustration count. And then when I was done, I'd be like, oh, you can buy this right over here. So, it's funny, in some senses, I felt like I was cheapening my magic by saying it was for sale when it was done. But on the other hand, I got hours and hours of practice in front of a real audience doing real flights. So that was a neat little way to kind of hone my chops when I was in college was definitely the toy store venues that we have here in New York.
Yeah.
As far as history, as things that aren't happening right now, we have Broadway, We had, you know, Doug Henning was on Broadway. Joseph Gabriel was on Broadway. We have some of the, you know, Steinmeier has stuff that's still on Broadway happening right now. You know, he did consulting for, you know, most of the big shows, you know, Mary Poppins, Beauty and the Beast. We had, who is the gentleman who consulted for Ghost on Broadway? Do you remember that?
I was just thinking about that, and I was trying to remember his name. Now you've just called me out.
Oh, gosh. It'll come to me. Was it... gosh, I'm not sure. It'll come to me. It'll come to me. But, yeah, there's tons of magic here in New York, and there's really lots of places to see it.
Well, where can we see Ben Nimzer?
Ah, good question. Well, I do perform regularly at Monday Night Magic. I have all of my upcoming shows will be posted on my events page at bennimzer.com. There's a really cool show I'm doing in March called The Wonder Show. And that'll be posted on my website as well. And that's kind of a magic and variety show that's going to have some of the coolest acrobats you've ever seen, all kinds of really neat things. So that's something I'm excited to be part of. That's going to be at the Galapagos Art Space down in Dumbo, Brooklyn. But there's where else am I performing soon? Look at my website. You'll see all my upcoming things there. But most of my stuff is private, but there are things you can come see me here and there. During the summer, I perform at Victorian Gardens in Central Park, and I also perform in front of the Carousel at Bryant Park. Both of those are right in Midtown. So those are some fun free shows that happen periodically throughout the summer. If, you know, we have a long time to go for that, but those happen in New York too.
All right, great. Well, it has been great having you here today. We have gone on quite a bit. This will be one of our longer podcasts, I think.
Oh, my goodness. You'll have to edit it. No one will hear me talk for that long.
So thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next week, keep up with all the latest going on in the world of magic at itricks.com.
itricks.com.